Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at, well, the environment inside your house. That's something that's on our minds today. Can be a real problem, that environment. If there's mold as an issue, if you got some mold in your home, things aren't always the best. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along as we visit with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. They come by every couple months to share information, tell you how to make sure your home is safe for you and for your children and your pets as well. Great to have them along. If you have questions for them, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post there on the Larry Mueller Show. And John Viner, good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Yeah, and Chad Spade, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Yeah, you're a busy guy these days?
Very busy.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's the economy is picking up then, we hope.
I think it is.
Yeah. How about you, John?
Oh, yeah, working on a number of different educational opportunities. We have a lighting and daylighting course in Sun Prairie and Appleton coming up, and looking at lighting strategies and how to tie that with daylighting opportunities. So it's a great course coming up in a couple weeks. You can find that at ecw.org.
ecw.org. And Chad, you're working, well, that's a home repair or renovation, probably renovation more than anything.
Yeah, a lot of renovation, a number of kitchen and bathroom remodels. We've had a few additions this year. We've got a couple additions probably still going to happen before the snow flies. So, yeah, people are improving their homes.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, we have lots of callers online. I know mold comes up as an issue. Is it more of an issue in the summertime than it is in the wintertime?
Well, you know, mold, it really depends on what's causing it. Mold, certainly when it's raining, if water is getting into the structure, that can be an issue that's more likely to cause problems in the warmer months. But it's really in the winter when we can see humidity-related mold causing problems for homeowners, because if moisture is getting into the walls and hitting those cold surfaces that we have here in Wisconsin, you can get mold and mildew forming in the walls or on the walls if they're cold spots, and that can be a real problem.
Yeah, you get water, leaky water pipe, for example, something like that. You can,
yep,
even that can help,
yeah,
create a problem.
That's correct. And, you know, it's the interesting thing about being a residential remodeling contractor is you see so many different materials. So, for example, the things we use for water pipes, you know, there are different sorts of plastic pipes out there now that are very common. Some of it's good. Some of it has problems. There was a period when copper piping that was put in was very thin. And so we get problems with pitting and little leaks.
Mm.
And then, you know, sometimes folks won't know that they have a small leak until it has created a big problem. So you never know what you're going to find.
And, John, there are some environmental risks for that.
Yeah, absolutely. That indoor air quality certainly is really important to take care of. There's actually been, even in the summer, Chad mentioned the winter time, but this summer when it was really hot and humid, we would get humid moisture from the exterior penetrating roof systems, certain style of roof systems, hot roofs where the insulation's uptight to the roof deck, that actually caused problems. And ideally that's keeping that up in the attic is better than in the indoor environment, but we want to make sure those barriers and those systems are in place, one, to prevent it, and two, to keep it out of that living space for sure.
Yeah. And here, believe it or not, it will be cold. We have already, once just a week or so ago, turned on the gas fireplace. One evening, it was damp and it was cold, and we turned it on. Haven't turned the furnace on yet, but that's a coming, as they say, and there are some things probably to think about before you turn that furnace on for the first time.
Yep, absolutely. And that's, I always think of that dust that's settling in that furnace when I turn that heat on for the first time, and a little bit of dust is accumulated and it starts to burn off, and you get a little bit of an odor in the house. So, making sure the windows are open, I think, is usually a prudent step, just to air out the house that first time that furnace kicks on as one of those initial steps to undertake. And clean furnace filter is another one. Supply.
Yeah, I got a box of filters. I just keep a box down in the basement, box of filters, and put the write the date on the, of the last change on the top of the box, and that's how I keep track. So that's and fan settings, that sort of thing.
Yeah, sometimes it's appropriate to run that furnace fan all the time on a continuous basis, but it's not absolutely necessary. So it's one of those things that you might, whether your heating contractor suggested turning your fan on all the time, or you think that creates comfort problems, it's something to take a look at the beginning of the year. You can save dollars and energy by only having that fan come on when the heating system kicks on versus running the fan 24 hours. So you might start off the season without that fan running 24 hours a day and seeing assessing the comfort level in your home without that fan just to see if you can save some dollars and still achieve a certain level of comfort. So I would certainly take a look at that up front.
We have many callers to visit with you, so I'd like to go to the phones, and Kathy and Madison up first. Kathy, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, is that me?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Okay, I have a lung problem that I've been dealing with. We moved into this house in Madison in 1989, and it was built in 85, I think, or 86. And they put insulation in right away, the pink insulation. They put studs down the basement, pink insulation, and put plastic over it. And we moved in February, and the first thing I saw was moisture all over the plastic when summer came. So I figured all my insulation is wet. So I slid it, the plastic, and let the insulation dry out. And now I'm finding when I remove a piece for some reason, or I've just noticed pieces that are black, and when I take them down, they're all moldy on the side of the cement. And I think I've heard from other people that that was a way they do not insulate basements that way, or they do not insulate them so fast anymore. And I'm just wondering, should I remove all of that insulation?
Well, it would be a good idea to go ahead and remove that because of the mold that has accumulated on the back side. What has changed in our understanding of how to build a home is that moisture is likely to come through the cement walls of the foundation. And so we don't want to ever put up a vapor barrier down inside that the building, and particularly we don't want to put it on the inside so that the moisture that comes into the wall is trapped, as it was in your case and in many other homes. So it would be prudent to go ahead and remove all of that material, and then if you can afford to apply a spray foam, a two-part spray foam, that's the best way really to re-insulate those walls and not have to worry about having those mold and mildew problems. And it will provide comfort and a continuous air barrier down there.
Yeah, we're not using it except for, like, storage, and my husband has tools down there. But the basement definitely has an odor that a newer, you know, a 20-year-old home shouldn't have.
Right. And so, and that brings up another topic, which is, you know, dehumidification, particularly down in that basement. Is probably going to be necessary, and so you want to make sure that you know, you're, if there's a collection tank, that you're emptying that so that the dehumidifier can do its job.
We pretty much have it running constantly in the summer. We have a hose to the drain.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yep, that's a good way to go. And there are some. You probably have a portable dehumidifier. There are some larger units that can be installed that are more energy efficient, that will remove more moisture from the air. And so you might consider something like that if you're interested in, you know, continuing to dehumidify the air without the expense of your current dehumidifier.
There you go.
Okay, so I could probably have a company or somebody come in and do the removal and put in the spray.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim had, you're talking about mold on walls, on the corners. kind of around the corners of two basement wall. The walls on two corners had kind of black, pretty much, you know, black all along the walls. And I saw it's probably something leaking on the corners, but that black mold should be eliminated, I would think, huh?
Yeah, you know, mold is something that is going to form whenever you've got oxygen, moisture, and some sort of material that it can feed on, typically a cellulose or wood material. And so, you know, we often see it forming on drywall, which is a paper product. You know, you can see often it's just dust that's accumulated on the cement wall that then becomes kind of a food for the mold. And you know, mold is certainly we want to reduce and if not eliminate the moisture that's feeding it. But if we can seal it up and essentially not allow that material to get damp, then, you know, if it's encapsulated, then we don't have to worry about it.
Christy and Holman, it's your turn. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Actually, it's about mold, too. I've had chronic sinusitis for like a year now, and I had surgery a couple months ago, and it came back after a couple months, and I read something about mold and started worrying that maybe that was an issue. We actually left the house for a week, and I felt better and came back. So how do I go about like finding out where it might be?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Yeah, that probably is going to be hiring a professional to come in and take a look at it, especially when we know that you have known symptoms or ailments such as you have. One way is always the nose and smell. You smell it, you have it, is one approach. And always testing the interior environment for mold isn't something that we jump on in a quick fashion, because we're going to find mold when we test for it in the house. But I would say that anybody that has an ailment such as yours, and you know you get better outside the home, that's certainly a prudent step to take, is to have a professional come in and take air samples and test for the types of mold that you had and start working with you with the types of symptoms that you're experiencing.
So a mold remediation specialist, is that the proper term?
Yep, I think you certainly will find mold remediation specialist just right there in the yellow pages. You're going to be able to find that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager of the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guest as we talk with them about home renovation repair. Zeroed in a little bit on mold, but taking other questions as well. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking your home repair with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening in. Actually, we have an open line. We can get you on at 1-800-642-1234 or shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org or on my Facebook page. You can even post a photo. If you have a photo of a problem area, might be able to take a look at it and help you out. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. Joanna in Reedsburg has a question for you guys. Joanna, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a moisture question, too, but it's an outdoor thing.
Okay.
We have pre-finished fiber cement siding, and we have several areas, primarily around the windows, but some other areas, too, where the paint and the primer are just peeling off. We've had the siding company come out and look at it a couple times, and they say it's a moisture issue behind the siding, but we don't really have a clue as to, you know, how would we look into fixing that or even telling if that's true or if they're just trying to get out of, you know, repainting it.
was this a pre-painted for you?
Yeah.
So, because those are guaranteed for a long time.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So we're like, are they just saying that because they don't want to, you know, follow through on the warranty, or is it real, and is it something that we should address?
Yeah,
that, you know, I guess it sounds like, you know, there may be an issue with the product, and it's hard to know without looking into it a little bit more carefully. You might consider, you know, contacting another professional to have them have a look at it to give you a second opinion.
Okay.
I would.
What type of professional would that be? just like a home remodeling type person, or?
Yeah, someone else that would install the product, and it would, and you know, I would generally recommend going through one of the professional associations to make sure that you're getting a credible
person.
Yeah, and you can call a local NARI Remodeling Association, for example, and get a recommendation from them, or the Better Business Bureau. I mean, there are places where you can get a recommendation for someone that's highly qualified, and then they, you know, you make a few phone calls and find someone who's willing to come out and take a look at it.
Yeah,
I've done that for many clients.
Some steps of where's that moisture coming from? If it's coming from behind the cement board siding, it makes sense that that's peeling the surface paint of that mm-hmm. cement siding. And is the water coming? You said it's by a window, so can we identify?
It's around almost all of the windows on the north and the east side of the house, but mm-hmm. there are some other scattered areas where it's doing the same thing.
Yeah, if there was a flashing detail that was consistent on those sides of the houses, that maybe isn't working effectively. So we got to understand if we can. Might be that same contractor that will assess the situation can remove some siding possibly and look to identify the trail of moisture and find out if it's a top of a window flashing detail or along the sides. You know, the other obvious one, if moisture is getting into the wall cavities, maybe you have a indoor pool in your house and there's lots of humidity. Is the humidity levels really high for some reason in the home? Or it's a flashing detail that needs to maybe take a look at.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you much.
Thanks much for calling. Appreciate it. And Carolyn in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. It's a pleasure to talk with you this morning. I had just talked to my husband about washing the siding on our house, but I'm a little concerned. We did a total renovation and remodeling project where we finished off the basement of a ranch home. And it seems like the north side of the house now has more mildew and things on the siding and mold than it used to have. And I just am wondering if the two are connected. We also had a sprinkler system that was spraying on a house a little too hard. And I've since had that changed. And we plan to wash the house on Saturday, but I'm wondering if it's a deeper concern.
What type of siding do you have on the home?
It's a vinyl siding.
Okay. Well,
it's always gotten a little bit of mildew on that side, but it seems like it's a little more than usual now.
Okay. Well, one thing that I'll just say, and I don't know if you might know about this or if how easy it would be for you to look behind your siding, but we see sometimes on homes that they don't have any sort of a house wrap or waterproofing underneath the siding. And vinyl siding, like many types of, or really any siding on the house, when you spray it with a power washer, water is going to go through that siding. On vinyl, there are little weep holes on the underside of it. And because the pressure washer drives the water into it, the water will go behind the siding. And if there aren't proper detailing, if it isn't done properly behind that siding, then you are going to be driving water into the wall of the house while you're washing it. So that is something that we do have to be concerned about and know that we're not going to create problems while we're also making the siding look nicer.
Sure.
It's hard to know whether or not you need to be concerned about that without assessing the house.
Mm-hmm. Can we just take soap and water, a bucket, and maybe wash it down, be better than pressure washing?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a better way to go with most, almost any time. I mean, that, you know, there's certain materials that are that can handle a pressure washing, but I would say with the vinyl siding, generally, it's not the best idea.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that, and we'll be able to check both things, the mm-hmm. vinyl wrap. And also, you know, the hand washing it is viable. It's just that north side of the house is quite high. So, But we'll figure it out, and I really appreciate being able to talk with you this
morning. Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much for calling. Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
I'm talking to you inside the car with one of these newfangled phones, and I just wondered if you could hear me.
Yep, we're fine.
We have a furnace that is, it takes in fresh air from the outside, and I never did understand how that works. I want to know, should it be serviced? I'd like to just know what there is about it. We did not buy the home new, but it's almost new.
Mm-hmm.
Someone undoubtedly paid extra to get that put in. So I was just wondering what the specialist might could tell me about that.
Sure. So that fresh air intake, it's pretty standard installation as a means to bring in fresh air, but it was actually designed originally to make up air as you turn on your dryer and your exhaust fans in the bathroom and kitchen. It was designed to bring in and relieve some pressure from those exhaust appliances. But it doubles and does a okay job, if designed properly, to bring in fresh air every time that furnace fan comes on. It's designed, maybe there's a little swing damper, a little balancing damper that's going to open up when the furnace fan comes on, to draw a small amount of air in through that typical 6-inch ductwork. The maintenance really is that sometimes we find that screen on the termination on the outside of your house plugged, so that we don't get as much fresh air as we think we are, or it's full of lint or dog or cat hair, etc. And so we need to take a peek underneath side there, clean off the screen. Then really we should be good to go. Now the history of those vent systems, they don't always work as designed or work very well depending on the installation. So we can get a small amount of fresh air in those vents, and there can be a good idea. But it all depends on how well it's installed, whether it's actually giving you a whole lot.
Hmm.
Well, that's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Nelson. Chad Spade and John Viner are guests today. Chad from Chad's Carpentry owns Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner from the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in. Call in with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Carol in Madison.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I heard your guests talking earlier about material that covers the basement walls, because I've got a basement and I've got drywall on it, and I was told by a professional a couple weeks ago that that material really had to go because he could smell mold. And so I was listening very intently when your guests were talking about that. But my question is, and I will remove it, my question is, what do I do after I remove the material to remove the mold? Is there something that I can do as a do-it-yourselfer to get rid of the mold? And what is that?
Well, it depends on, for a do-it-yourselfer, we really want to have, if there's a limited amount of mold, if there's a couple square feet of patch of mold, then I might recommend a do-it-yourselfer taking soap and water.
Awesome.
We're not using bleach or any other chemicals to take it off.
Okay.
But we're washing it with warm, soapy water. If it's much larger area than a couple square feet, then I would recommend a professional come in and do do their professional service to get that done appropriately and then to keep it dry. So whether you have to remove all the drywall on that basement wall or walls is really how much is it deteriorated and how much mold is on those surfaces. But where you smell it, we want to certainly get behind there, assess the extent of the mold. If it's small enough, then a homeowner can go after it, keep it dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then the detail, sometimes what's the source of the moisture? Is it from the exterior, as Chad had mentioned earlier, or is it from the interior? And then we're going to have to take the steps exterior. We know we got to have the grading and the gutters and everything working properly. If it's from the interior, then we need to air seal. We need to have gasketed, caulked seams, whatever finished material we have in front of that wall to finish that basement.
Mm-hmm.
It really has to be airtight to be effective to stop the moisture from coming in contact with that concrete and re-aggravating that mold situation.
Well, you kind of bring up another question for me, which is how to properly ventilate the basement, because right now I have no ventilation in the basement. I have glass block windows, two glass block windows on one side of the basement. It's a small basement, but there's no air coming in there, and I'm not sure exactly what to do about that either.
Well, in the summertime, we don't want to ventilate the basement. We know because the warm, humid air is going to come in. We don't want to bring that warm, humid air into the basement, so
okay.
We're not ventilating it at that point. In the wintertime, our goal is primarily to ventilate our living spaces,
mm-hmm.
So if we're not spending a lot of time in the basement, it's probably not as important.
Okay.
When it comes to conditioning the air within the home, dehumidification is obviously the step that most of us undertake and
mm-hmm.
in the summertime, and even in the, now as it comes into fall and the shoulder season, we get a cold spell really quick. We're going to maybe smell mold in our basement in the fall because of all of a sudden the surface has cooled off, but the humidity didn't lower.
Okay.
As quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we don't need to worry about bringing necessarily fresh air into the basement, especially if it's a seldom used place.
Yeah, it's an unfinished basement,
mm-hmm.
Very old. But, well, thank you for your mm-hmm. help.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Diane in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have an additional question on that basement mold issue that you spoke with a lady earlier and told her that replacing that pink mold insulation and doing a two-part spray foam on that wall?
Yeah,
yes.
Why does that work now? I mean, I understand why the plastic wouldn't work now, but why is the technology now saying that that does work?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent question. I'll tell you, it works best when the spray foam is continuous on the entire wall, so that if there's a framing on the wall, if there's a stud wall there for wiring and for some sort of drywall or other material to be attached, if that material is installed about an inch inside of the cement so that the foam can be continuous, then what it does is it prevents air from getting to the cement. Part of what happens when we're having mold on surfaces in a home is that moist air often is hitting a cold surface and it's then condensing, and that moisture, because it has it's getting oxygen, mold is able to grow. And so when you spray a wall or a cavity with the foam, it completely air seals it so that it's preventing moisture and air from getting to that colder cement surface. Now, this is actually fairly complex, because the other thing that's going on there is that with a foundation, which is down below grade, the cement wall is different from other walls in our home because it is actually often getting moist from the outside because it's down underground. And the thermal dynamics of a home and kind of the way building science operates on that home, we can have moisture coming into our homes from the basement walls and the floor. So, you know, it can be a risky proposition if it's not done right. You know, when you're spraying that foam or you're putting any material on that wall, you really need to make sure that you're not allowing that, that either the moisture is passing through it and it's able to come into the living space and then the air can be dehumidified. That's fine. We don't want to trap it in a wall there with, say, plastic. But the spray foam is tolerant of moisture. So it works well in part because it is not going to, it isn't a food for mold. It's going to stop moisture and it's going to stop air. So basically, it has a number of attributes which make it effective. But there are still issues at play there, and we can see failures in these systems when there are certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. I've struggled with mold in the past, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, And I now have nothing on the walls and was wondering about what I could do. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just as okay. I think Chad said very clearly, the spray foam isn't a substitute for good drainage on the exterior of your house. It doesn't solve the moisture problem by itself, right?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you mm-hmm. very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Smeet and John Viner, our guests, Larry Mueller here, Jeff in Bayfield, it is your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Good. You were talking earlier about a dehumidifier in the basement.
Yeah.
And I've got a dehumidifier, and it's been in the basement for maybe, 8 years. I'm wondering what the longevity of those things are, and it seems like no matter what setting I put it on, whether it's low, medium, or high, or dry, you know, driest or whatever, it always seems to operate the same, and it is always on. It concerns me.
Mm-hmm. Probably burning through a little electricity there while that's on, Jeff. But
that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, John, what do you think, John Viner?
Well, is it always pumping out water at the same time? So are you always emptying the bucket?
Well, I don't have a bucket. I have a little hose going down to the drain. Yeah.
So I would occasionally. I've taken mine out of the drain and just used the bucket approach, so that when I hear that dehumidifier running, I know I'm getting something out of it. Because yeah. I don't always trust it, just because as I watch the pennies each month. But so if you have a bucket, just know that you're pulling moisture out. If you're pulling moisture out and the humidity in the basement is still 50% or somewhere in there, I like to see mine under 50% in the basement with my dehumidifier if I can. Then we know it's still working for you. And if you or others go down to the basement and it always is smelling moist and humid in the basement, like a cave, then, well, that dehumidifier is just trying to do its job, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just quickie. How long would you expect a dehumidifier to be capable of operating smoothly?
This one's 8 years old at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, sometimes they can operate for 20 years. I mean, I've seen some older dehumidifiers. The only thing, and the technology behind a dehumidifier, I don't think we've,
changed much?
The portable dehumidifiers, I think, are pretty much
they're
fairly simple, and I don't think we see a lot of gain deficiencies with some of those little portable ones. But it is true that, if the controls on it are not operating properly, it will be potentially running, as John alluded to, when it's not actually pulling any humidity out of the air, either because it doesn't need to be running, but it thinks it should run, or maybe it's just not operating as well as it should, and it's not removing that humidity. You know, I like having gauges around so that, you know, some little inexpensive hygrometers that you put out on your dresser or on a tabletop that will let you know roughly the humidity in the home, the relative humidity. Those little inexpensive gauges may not be precise, but they do help to confirm what you are perceiving, which is whether or not, you know, maybe it's humid in here and I want this device to be operating, or maybe the humidity's down and you can turn it off.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Would you say that a humidifier is equivalent to some other electrical appliance in the house that you know something about as far as the voltage used and so forth? What would it be equivalent to, you think?
And the equivalent to the amount of energy use. So
yeah.
Whether it's $15, $20 a month or so, we've got a compressor and a fan back there. So a refrigerator has a compressor and a fan, but I think those are probably, they've really worked on bringing the efficiency levels up and the energy use down on the refrigerators. So that might be one of the closest ones that I could think of. A small window air conditioner, that's maybe getting in the same ballpark.
Can you hook, there's a way, isn't there, to say test how much electricity is being drawn from a particular device like that?
Yeah, there are devices. A lot of the in the Madison area here, I believe the library will loan out these meters that you can go around and plug different appliances into them and operate them, and it will actually let you know how much power it's drawing. And yeah. So that's a handy tool.
Yeah, very handy.
Can you get these gauges you talked about that measure the humidity in a local hardware store?
Yes, you can. Yep.
Okay.
Good luck, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Kay in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Chad. This is Kay. I had a question for you guys. I had some work done on my central air this summer.
Central air? Okay.
And basically, they replaced the central air unit. And in the process of doing that, they noticed that the intake of my furnace is actually in the basement and not attached to the outside. Obviously, the exhaust goes outside, which is a good thing for everyone.
Right, of course.
And, but the intake is actually drawing air from the basement.
Right. Yep, this is actually a common older way, and there's still some furnaces out there that can be purchased and installed, which are drawing their combustion air from the basement. This is true of most hot water heaters. They mostly draw their combustion air from the basement, and so. It's only the exhaust that's going to the outside. And so what that is that's not what we would call a sealed combustion unit, where all of the air involved in burning the fuel and then the exhaust from that is in a closed loop that would go from the outside to the outside. So you don't have that with your furnace. And the only thing... that means that inherently it is a less efficient appliance. Typically, those appliances tend to be around 80% efficiency, and they're a newer one might push say to 90%.
Yeah, you bet. So those you
the
have
older
a,
ones tend to be about an 80% efficiency.
You have a condensing furnace with white PVC pipe as the vent system.
That's correct.
Yeah, so those it's a 90% furnace. And the manufacturer does allow that type of installation, and it's based on the volume of the space that the intake is pulling from compared to the BTU capacity of the furnace. So there's a chart or a formula that the installers or the installation, the furnace manufacturer has put in the installation manual, and it is acceptable to do that. There may be a little slight deficiency, but it still is producing at a 90% combustion efficiency furnace.
So I shouldn't be worried about the potential vacuum that's causing and drawing cold air into the home, having to heat the house continually because of the vacuum and the air draw?
My initial response is no, I wouldn't. It's so small amount of air that I wouldn't be concerned about that. The thing that I would be concerned about and recommend is if that intake is drawing air near a washer and dryer, or where we have soaps and detergents, a cat litter box, for example. If we're pulling air in a space that's somewhat confined and has those types of appliances and chemicals in it, then that can have adverse effects on the heat exchanger of the furnace.
Very good. I don't think I have that issue, but thank you very much. So
yep.
Acceptable. It is acceptable design. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair, dealt a lot with mold today with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Rick in Clintonville up next with a question for you guys. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Perfect. Thank
Good.
You.
Thank you.
I have an A-frame cottage in northern Wisconsin that I want to try to insulate the roof on. and I'm wondering how one goes about that. If I would like to try to put the insulation on the outside as opposed to the inside to maintain the integrity of the inside, it's knotty pine and so forth, with large beams, and I'm wondering if that's possible to do.
Absolutely. The most typical thing that you would do is you would clean off the roof deck. Remove the shingles, or what? Do you have a composite shingle on there now? Okay, so you would take it down to the plywood or the sheeting, and then over top of that, you would install a tar paper or ice and water shield, and then anywhere from probably 4 to 6 inches of foam insulation directly over that, and then ideally some furring strips would then be installed to both attach to attach that foam insulation securely to the structure, and then a new layer of plywood or sheeting over that for the new roof. So then what you've done is you've created a ventilated roof deck for the new roof, and you've got a solid, continuous, insulated layer mm-hmm. that's on top of the entire home. Now, the really critical detail that you want to complete as part of this is on the entire perimeter of the house, where the insulated walls should be connected to and sealed with that foam layer. You're going to need to do something to make sure that that is in fact continuous. While there's value to just having a lid that is continuous and insulated, I'm going to assume your goal is also to, have a higher, efficient, more comfortable home. So you need to connect the insulation of the walls to that layer that's on the roof. And that can be a little complicated depending on how the house is built.
Okay. The foam, does that come in sheets 4x8 or is that sprayed?
It comes in sheets. And generally okay. What we use is a polyiso foam. For that application, it has an R value of approximately 7 per inch. So if you're putting 4 inches of foam up on the roof, you're going to expect a R value of about 28 to 30. And, that because it's continuous, because there's no framing in between, it is a very effective thermal barrier.
Yeah, okay, so the furring strips that you put in, would that have to just go around the outside perimeter, or would you have to run some through the center to help hold these 4x8 sheets in place?
Yeah, they're actually run generally up and down, okay. perpendicular to the rafter, or I'm sorry, parallel to the rafters, okay. And, every 16 to 24 inches on center. They are there to support the new roof deck. And they're also there to essentially secure the foam layer to the house. And there's some screws that are made precisely for this sort of application that are essentially lag bolts that are designed to be able to both grab a hold of the wood structure that you're going to need to connect to. Right. And they're self-drilling, and they'll countersink. You need to have the right screws for that application, because you have to be concerned about wind shear and things like that. And obviously, you don't want them to ever fail or rust off, because your entire roof will blow off of your home. So it's very important that this stuff be well attached. So
okay, yeah, good. We don't need that.
No, good luck, Rick.
Thanks for your information. Thanks for your help. Is there some place that I can call in regard to get additional information and or materials for this? Or should most construction people know this, know how to do this?
Well, it's this approach to roof insulation is more typically done commercially than residentially. So I would say that, you know, it's hit and miss whether you're going to encounter someone at the local building supply, you know, retailer, whether they will have a, you know, familiarity with these things. But, you know, you can, I think most roofing wholesalers, because they deal with both commercial and residential applications, they will have that material and that expertise to probably be able to assist you.
So one resource I'd recommend is buildingscience.com. So it's a website, buildingscience.com. And they are going to have some great schematics. So I would do a little bit of homework on it to get some of the finer details, such as as you lay down the foam sheathing, you stagger the seams so they don't all line up. And they're going to have some great I believe they have them still online, great colorful schematics that you can use as a resource and take to either a contractor or supplier and say, this is what I'm looking at. And I think it would make sense for them once they saw some pictures.
Very good.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for your help.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And Nancy in Grafton. Hi.
Yes, this is a question. A toilet, few minutes, a little bit of water runs and just for a few seconds and it stops. So we want to put a new toilet in. And what, have you got any smart ideas? I certainly want an American-made one. So what should we be looking for?
Well, the fact that the toilet runs every few minutes, it sounds to me like the internal, you got a little leak there you could probably just fix.
Well,
yeah. Or unless you just want to get a new toilet.
I think we just want to get a new one because my husband did check on the gaskets and all that stuff inside. I guess that we need a new one.
Okay.
Yeah, so one of the things that can be causing that is if when you've got hard water, you know, we see a lot of mineral deposits on those gaskets, and that will lead over time to a failure and that slight leak.
You got a water softener.
Okay, well, that's good, though. A lot of times people don't have soft, cold water going to the toilet, though it is a good idea if, you know, and so that's something that you might consider if it can be easily done. You know, a plumber can run cold, soft water to a toilet, and that will help reduce this problem. I'm not sure about toilets right now that are made in the USA.
Kohler? Isn't that made right here in Wisconsin?
I was thinking Kohler.
Well, mm-hmm. You have to check on that. I know.
Their name might be on it, but not manufactured here.
Right, though I think Toto toilets may be made in the USA, but I'd have to check on that. I'm not sure. You'd have to do your research.
One of the criteria is just the water use gallons per flush.
Yes.
So if conservation there is important to you, then we can go with a little bit lower per flush. But I think about 1.6 gallons per flush is the standard, if I recall correctly. And you can go down lower from there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. A Facebook question from Meg. We bought a 10-year-old modular home last year. Several of the double pane windows have blown seals, resulting in discoloring and moisture inside. When the window guy came out to give me an estimate, he told me it would not really improve my heating or cooling bill appreciably by getting them repaired. It was more cosmetic. I thought the point of double pane windows with vacuum between the panes was some sort of insulation.
Well, so that's this is true. They're both correct on some levels. When you have two panes of glass like that, you are going to have greater efficiency even when you don't have a perfect seal, because the you have essentially this buffered area in between the two panes, which is going to be roughly the temperature in between the exterior and the interior. And when those panes of glass are close together, you reduce the potential for convection, which is one of the ways that we have heat loss. Having said that, if you don't have a sealed thermopane, then you are going to see some denigration of that efficiency. And then furthermore, if there was an inert gas in the thermopane, like argon, then that would have been even more effective at reducing that convection. And once the seal is broken, well, you've no longer got an inert gas in the thermopane. So it is a nuisance. It is a cosmetic issue. And there is some reduction in the thermal efficiency of the glass.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have, boy, we have plenty of callers online. You can join in, though. I'll give you the number at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post questions or comments there. We have all kinds of things that are coming up here. We've got a mystery leak in the roof, and I'm sure we're going to hear from Chad and John about that. We'll also be talking about radon in basements. That's coming up as well with a question from Dennis in Appleton. What about you? Give us a call with your questions and comments. And we'll be taking a little break for a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at home renovation and repair issues with our guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, a Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. And happy to have both of them along. Thank you so much for listening in. Questions? Our lines are all filled now, but here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question or a comment there. John in Wild Rose has a question for you, too, so let's go there. Hi, John.
Good afternoon. We have a home that was built in 2005, 7 years ago, and we have a mystery leak in the roof. It has leaked four times in the 7 years. We've had the roofing contractors out. We've had people from some skylight windows out, and we cannot duplicate the leak. There doesn't seem to be any correlation between a hard rain and leaking. Sometimes it's just a light, soft rain of a tenth of an inch, and it drips down by the corner of one of the skylights like it might be coming down one of the trusses. But, again, we can take a hose up there and hose the whole roof down for a half an hour, and we get nothing. Any suggestions?
Hmm.
Well, sometimes it can be the prevailing wind that is driving the water into this unusual location, and so that can explain the hard-to-find leak. It's a good thing, perhaps, to know that it is related to the rain falling, because every now and then we encounter a leak that really is a condensation problem. But it sounds like you have determined that it is related to rain.
Right. It never leaks if it's a windy, hard rain. It's always just a straight down.
Hmm.
And, yeah, that's what we've been saying, too. And, unfortunately, we have a wooden floor underneath it.
Okay. So one possible explanation, are there any plumbing vents in the vicinity of this leak or uphill from the leak?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we need a really big incentive to get our brains going on this one.
I don't know.
Hard to diagnose.
Even looking at it, it'd be hard.
Yep, when you're out there, as you've experienced from putting a hose on it and trying to diagnose it, and as Chad, I think, was leaning towards a plumbing stack or another fixture or penetration in the roof up above that water travels downhill and winds around to come to a spot. So when you're in the attic, you can see the moisture near a corner of the skylight or window when you're in the attic?
We have a cathedral ceiling in that part of the house. Mm. So all I can do is kind of hang around and look to see if there's anything coming like down a truss, the water actually comes. We have a wooden ceiling in the living room, and the skylight is trimmed in wood, and it always drips out in one spot between two boards at the bottom of the skylight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't really get up there to see it in the attic. At least I haven't been able to.
Yeah.
Well, and is the leak always on the edge of the skylight?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I would recommend probably completely reflashing, if not replacing, that skylight.
Mm-hmm.
Because there could very well be some sort of a defect, and a skylight, while is it a Velux skylight?
No.
Okay. Well,
yeah, it's opening it up and taking a look what's inside there. Really, we've got to have, it's a little demolition to get to the bottom of it, to know where it is. We've got to be able to see it to know, or we're just experimenting.
And would you have to wait until it actually happened and then do the demolition, or should you be able to tell once you...
I would think you'd be able to see some water staining on on the joist.
Right.
If you've got a finished ceiling on the inside, if it's sheetrock, it's some sheetrock repair to go up, take a look from the inside, and identify it.
Yeah, or just, taking out that wood, the wood trim that you refer to that's up there, if it can be carefully removed and salvaged and or replaced, and I would recommend that too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Dennis in Appleton, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, just had a question about radon, because I have a son and daughter that's still new house in Shawano. And they have two bedrooms in the basement, but I was wondering, is there standards for radon testing for new houses, or...
Okay.
There are certainly standards for radon levels in homes, and I guess the common one that still is a standard is 4 picocuries per liter. And there are standard tests that you can purchase at hardware stores to... test that level initially on a short-term basis, where we'd put a canister in the basement or two in our living areas in the lowest levels of the house. We wouldn't necessarily put it in a crawl space, for example, but where we spend time, we want to monitor the radon levels there. And it's very inexpensive, highly recommended for everyone to do if you haven't done that, because it's it's important to identify if you have high radon levels, and it's there are certain levels, geographical areas that have higher than others, but it's often a very hit and miss proposition. So, inexpensive test kit at a hardware store, and then they're going to diagnose. Then you mail that in, and they mail you back or electronically tell you what that level was.
Mm-hmm.
So, would be high levels, or? Is there certain things then you have to consider as far as airflow and circulation?
Yeah, what do you do if it's high?
So we're going to take a look. That radon typically is going to come from underneath the basement slab. That's one common area and first place that we would want to address. And that's sealing any holes in the concrete slab so that we, cracks, seams, etc. Is certainly the most prudent step, and then a remediation step would be to put in a radon mitigation system that really is going to punch a 4-inch hole through the concrete slab, and we're going to poke a pipe in there underneath the concrete slab and put a fan on the pipe and pump that air from underneath the slab out the house up through the roof according to good practices and good standards, which a contractor will be able to help you with.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thanks again, Dennis, for calling. Teresa in Green Bay, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a brick house built in 52, and because we're in Green Bay, they're angled so that the corner of the house faces north. And on the north side, I have moisture all winter long. And even running a dehumidifier, I can't run it in the bedroom, obviously, but even running a dehumidifier in the house hasn't helped. And it doesn't get that much moisture on the south side unless it's really, really cold. But all of the windows along the north side.
Mm-hmm. So it is primarily you're seeing the condensation on the windows in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And the dehumidifier, you're certainly operating, it sounds like, and running it. Ideally, in the wintertime, we wouldn't have to run that dehumidifier if things were good to go. Is it, you still have original windows in there then, 1950s?
No, they were replaced, I want to say, about 25 or so years ago.
Mm-hmm. So either we have, and often we have a combination of these factors, we have a little higher relative humidity in the home for whatever reason, whatever sources of moisture that we have, and the windows aren't of the greatest quality, so their surface temperature is below the dew point in the wintertime. So we have a surface temperature of the glass that's lower than we like it, and a relative humidity level that maybe is a little higher than the structure can withstand. So we either have to take strategies that are going to warm the glass surface, which, well, in an extreme case, it's new windows to keep the glass warm enough. Sometimes the interior environment is such and operated in a way that the homeowners feel comfortable for their respiratory tracts and their health, which means maybe a little more humidity for whatever reason. And then the building components, we have to adjust for that. And on the extreme end, it is really good windows to stop that condensation. Though keeping the surface temperature warm of that window can be keeping heat on that glass. Maybe it's not closing the big drapes or the blinds or keeping the house slightly warmer in the wintertime, making sure the registers in those rooms are getting the warm air. I'm going to assume you have a forced air furnace, and we're getting enough warm air out of those registers to keep that bedroom warm. If we're closing the door, the bedroom door, and the heating system isn't designed or working to blow warm air into that room, and the temperature in that bedroom drops to 60 degrees, and you have 40% relative humidity in your house, you're going to get condensation and on that glass, and we all will in those situations. So keeping the bedroom door open, keeping the bedroom warmer and lower in humidity, and we got to find the right combination.
Keeping the bedroom warmer?
Yep, in the wintertime. So that, in essence, will keep the surface of the glass warmer, which will keep it above the dew point, which is the point at which the moisture in the air is going to fall out and turn to a liquid.
Because we turn our thermostat to like 63 at night.
Yeah, and that's common practice for energy savings, but the rest of the house has to be built and have the right components. So if we drop the temperature in the wintertime, it'll aggravate moisture condensation on windows for all of us. It's just physics, unless we have the glass of the window warm enough, which, like I said, could mean a really good window. It could mean a warmer house, or the register is able to blow and we're able to get that warm air on the glass. Sometimes if we have a deep wall cavity and the window is recessed to the exterior of the wall cavity, then the warm air isn't smart enough to know to get up to the window sill and rush and brush across that window that's located to the exterior of that cavity. So we got to find a way to keep that glass warmer and lower humidity. Those are our options.
Yep.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I got an email from Lynn who says, you mentioned warm water, using warm water and soap to get rid of mold. She'd always heard that you should use bleach. Will the warm water and soap be strong enough to get rid of it? Why not bleach?
Bleach has kind of fallen out of favor, in part because of its toxicity. We're trying to get rid of mold, which is maybe hurting our health, and then we're using a chemical that's pretty harsh on that surface, and it doesn't. It does kill the mold, but warm water and a good washing is going to take that mold off that surface, as well as bleach is going to.
And a Facebook question from Anita: what can I use to remove old black adhesive from my basement floor? Product used 40 plus years ago to cement rubber tile. I'm told that I must remove this adhesive as new tile will not adhere to it. Pretty much right about that, I find.
Yeah, sounds like some elbow grease there, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
If we're going to get that wet and soaping that up, I'm sure there's some types of chemicals, but I couldn't name them right off the top of my head. We're going to have to see how tough that is to take an ice scraper or, you know, something that you would scrape on the sidewalk and just beat up that concrete a little bit if you're going to cover it to get that surface off.
Yeah, and the only thing I'll just mention, I mean, we always have to be concerned that there can be asbestos in some of the older materials out there, and so we see it in adhesives and sometimes in those that kind of black tar that is sometimes found in the mix of a floor assembly. So if there's a lot of it and you're going to have to be really aggressive with it, then you might consider having it tested because you don't want to endanger anyone's health.
Yep. Laura in La Crosse. Hi.
Hello. I had just recently bought a house, and the basement is partially finished. When I opened the closet door from the finished part, the closet is not finished. And hanging down from coming from above where the finished ceiling is into the closet is this mystery green hose. And when someone showers in the first floor shower, water will drip out of the hose. And I have no idea what the purpose of this is and where it goes and how I can fix it. Right now I just got a bucket underneath it.
So, I mean, does it run the whole shower's worth of water, or is it just a little trickle, or?
It depends. I used to measure it a little bit, but, you know, it's in the bottom of a bucket. It doesn't get to be more than a half an inch of water. I accidentally overflowed the bathroom once, and then there was a lot, but the shower once. But it, I don't know, it's not a trickle. It's probably a trickle, so not a drip, but not a gush.
Yeah. Sounds like somebody made a mistake way back when, and that was their temporary fix, and it turned into a long-term fix.
That's really a mystery. I mean, sometimes we'll see a hose connected to an overflow pan that might be put under a washing machine or an interior or attic air conditioning unit or something like that. And so, but it doesn't sound like this is what you have. Like, I can't imagine how you would have a collection pan under an entire bathroom.
Yeah, so there probably isn't an easy way in the subfloor to see where that hose goes if you stand on a ladder and look up and follow to the other end of that green hose. We're going to have to find where that water is leaking and come from. It sounds like you're going to have to open something up.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was worried about.
Or you just empty the bucket every day. I mean,
that's the thing. But talking about moisture all day here, you know,
right.
Bucket of water sitting in my basement.
Well, you know, if maybe you just add an extension to that hose and get it over to a floor drain, if that's feasible, so that at least you don't have to constantly worry about maintaining a bucket. And, you know, if there are other symptoms or issues, then, you know, you probably will see them. But if it is actually collecting the water and you're getting it to a drain, then that might be okay.
Okay. Yeah, sounds like a hidden one there.
All right, well, thank you.
All this talk about water, my father-in-law's friend of my father-in-law and mother-in-law's, they took off for friends took off for a week's vacation, and they have about a two-year-old home, and the water, he didn't shut the water off, and something broke, and so they had water running for a week in their house. So they had, I don't know how many inches of water through on both levels of the house. It was everything was pretty well. The floors are certainly ruined, and a lot of other things as well.
Yeah.
So it's just a little reminder sometimes, is just to take a minute to shut that water off when you leave, especially if you're going away for a week or two.
It's a good idea.
Man. John and Blight, hi, thank you for calling.
How's everyone going?
Good.
Good, thank you. So I got a question. Maybe I'm using the term wrong, and then I also have a comment. and maybe you can help me with that one as well. But I have some stuff growing in my basement. I thought it was mold, and so I got some remediation books and read them. But I had the professional cleaner come out, and they said it was effinescence, bringing the minerals through the concrete or the cinder block to the surface of the wall that I could see. Am I using the term right, effinescence?
Effervescence, I believe.
Effervescence?
Yes.
And he says that's not mold, it's not harmful, it's just minerals coming through the cinder block. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that's not mold?
No.
And then as I was listening, I heard you talk about washing and bleaching walls. Well, through the books I've read and the people coming out and looking at my effinescence, they said by disturbing the surface that way, you know, you could possibly be spreading mold, and that using soap and water, because I asked about bleach and soap and water, and they said I'm not killing the roots by doing it that way, that I need a sporicidin to actually kill the roots or to remove the mold altogether. I mean,
well, you know,
if
what you have is the effervescence, which it sounds like that's the issue, it is just physics drives this. Moisture is driving through that block or through that masonry structure, and those minerals are coming to the surface, and so it is not unto itself a problem. I mean, it's more of maybe an eyesore than anything else. And there's no reason for you to have to mitigate that.
Right, but in my bathroom, I do have some mold. And, I mean, if you're saying it's okay to just wash it off, that's fine. But he's saying I'm not killing the roots that way.
Well, so the root of mold is moisture. And so if you want to attack the mold problem, then maybe you might consider putting a better ventilation fan in the bathroom. That's one possible.
Yeah, and you're talking about the roots of the mold and
exactly.
Washing
like,
it off.
Know,
the roots are going to stay there. And that's where we're not ever going to eliminate mold and roots from our house. It just isn't going to happen. So if we have small patches, a homeowner, you know, square foot, or it's growing on little streaks a little bit, clean that up the best you can, dry it, and then keep the condition of that space clean and dry. And it isn't going to come back if we can mitigate and control that environment. If we have certainly significant amounts of mold, which, you know, I'm not going to claim to be a mold expert, but if you have more than a couple square feet of mold patches and growth within your home, I would say certainly we're going to get an expert, and he's going to take care of it in a professional manner. But if we have a little mold growing in our bathroom, clean it up, dry it, keep it dry, right? Yep. And we're going to be all right.
That's right.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And from Madison, just very quickly here, Rod in Madison, they did an energy audit. They're going to get they need to get a new furnace, a new water heater. Their choices are variable burner and fan speed for the furnace, as well as choosing between among a tankless condensing and tank water heater. Wondering where to go to get to figure out what's going to be the best for them in terms of their dollar value. And I'm wondering, in the last 20 seconds here, John, can we get that from – where do we get that from?
Good question. We might go to just even EnergyStar.com or EnergyStar.gov, looking at the Energy Star appliances. They're going to have some calculators there related to payback. So that's the federal EPA website. But it's a good source to go, and I think you could probably find your way to water heaters and furnaces pretty easily. Yep, so that's going to be a great start.
Chad, John, thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here as always.
Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. They both have websites. We have links to their websites on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Stay with us. Lots in store.